Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me is Jack Piattelli. Jack, still champs.
Unbelievable.
I'm gonna be so annoying. Sorry, I'm gonna tell our guest what I'm talking about. Our guest is Brett Manny from NXT and also of the NOL. NOL player. My team that I coached for high school won the state championship last weekend. So I'm still celebrating. I'm super pumped, but I'm also pumped to have you on the show. I don't think you and I have connected one-on-one before, but I definitely know who you are for sure from calling MLL games and going to see Black Wolves games. So looking forward to it and talking about NXT as well.
No, appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
And your official title is you're the VP of event sales and recruiting for
Correct.
NXT?
Yeah. Yep. So I like oversee all of our boys events and showcases. So we have 44, which we run throughout the country. And it's my job to kind of oversee those events and make sure that they're filled with like the right teams and look at our budgets and making sure that before the events get run, that we have all the right teams there and everything's dialed in. And then once the events are going on, it's like event management and making sure that when I'm on site, that the events run smooth.
Can I ask you how you got into that? Because I know that you were doing some broadcasting after playing in the MLL as well. How did that transition into this role that you have in NXT?
Yeah, so I got to go all the way back. I went to the University of Delaware. I played there. One of my best friends who I met at the University of Delaware was a year older than me, who's also a Philadelphia guy, Marty Cuprion. He's the man. And when we graduated college, he was 07, I was 08. And we had to hang out, like go to Phillies games. We were big Philly guys and they connected. And he went to Episcopal Academy. And at the time, their head coach was a guy named Andy Hayes, who ran like a little showcase back in the day in the spring, which was called the Philly Showcase. But he ran it as sophomores public versus private and juniors public versus private. And I remember Marty being like, hey, we need a PA announcer. Because he knew at the University of Delaware, I broadcasted men's and women's basketball and football games. So he knew I had like a background in that. So I was like, yeah, I'll be the PA announcer for this. And this was probably back in 2009 or 10 in the spring. And that's the first time I met Andy Hayes. And then he stayed connected with me with launching a club team the following fall and asked if I wanted to be one of the coaches. And I was hesitant at first. And then with the guidance of Marty as well, he's like, yeah, I think this would be great. And then really started with coaching with them. And then a year later, it was like offered me a full-time position, which ended up working out well at the time because I was with ESPN High School, covering lacrosse for ESPN High School. And then I got rid of all like the high school content right at the same time. And then fast forward to today, roles kind of changing, everything like that, and where I'm at. So that's kind of the cliff notes of it. But the background is being connected with a Delaware Blue Hen. I'm still one of my best friends, and that's where I'm at.
Speaking of Delaware Blue Hens, one of my favorite media connects, Evan Washburn, who taught me how to speak eloquently on a mic like literally 15 years ago. Now he works for CBS Sports. He's in the Super Bowl. I know so many guys that go into broadcasting for lacrosse and things like that. And I just point them to Evan. I know that like that's such a deep connection. And the Delaware alumni, grad junior, you have so many great guys that have come through your program. It's got to be strong, right? That network is pretty robust.
Yeah, ironically enough, Evan's a year older than me. And I never knew he wanted to get into broadcasting because at school, I was involved in our radio program. And there was a television like aspect of Delaware, but I couldn't get it within my schedule with our practices. And I remember one time, I think it was my junior year, we were in the same like broadcast journalism class. And I'm like, hey, like, what are you doing here, man? Like, cause at the time I was already broadcasting games for the university. And he's like, oh, this is what I want to do. And I was like, oh, like for 2.5 years, I never knew that that's what he was aspiring to be. And then kind of one thing led to another. With him, his actual real name is Evan Crowther Washburn. And then once he got like into more into media, he had to drop the Crowther. It's probably too many syllables. And now he's Evan Washburn. But yeah, it's great to see like all the success he's having and Super Bowl sideline and everything like that has kind of transitioned out of lacrosse. But yeah, it's so great for the sport.
You run some great events. We have been going to the NXT Philly Showcase for a number of years, and now you just took over the Yale event. One of the things I love about your event is you do a great job matching up the teams in terms of competition. The teams always are able to play in a pool where they're able to compete at a very high level. Your events are well attended, college coaches from all different levels, Division I, II, and III, and that's why we continue to support your tournaments in Connecticut now and in Philly. What's the key to your success over the years and maintaining the competition at the level it's at and continue to have the coaches coming every year? Because it's not an easy thing to do, to have that consistency over and over again. But I will say, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the podcast, but NXT does it as well, if not better than everybody out there.
No, I appreciate Jack for the kind words and the support. This answer for me is kind of threefold. The first one is like, we have a full-time operational team. So 5-6 people in-house where they basically run the event before the event. So they're making sure that we have balls, scoreboards, cones, all that's dialed in, talking to vendors, getting logistics squared away, contracts, everything that are these minute details that sometimes people overlook or they will skip because it does cost money. We have people full time and that's their job and they're very good at it. There's a rare occasion where like if there's 10 fields and we only have 9 scoreboards, that is so rare, but they do an excellent job and they never get the credit that they deserve. And that helps make my life a lot easier. So when I go to the event, I know that I can count on that. We have enough walkie talkies and scoreboards, balls, all that type of stuff is squared away by them. So that's the first part. You need a great team, just like in any successful team that you guys have been on. There's obviously great leadership, but you need a buy-in from everyone. And they do an excellent job of organizing that behind the scenes. And then for the last, 12, 13 years, it's just really like relationships and building on those relationships with people to run these events and knowing that you're giving them your word and how you do things. And every event's different, right? Like a youth event to a high-end recruiting event. There are sometimes recruiting events that aren't as high-end and you have different type of people that are behind those events too. And you're trying to organize what is the best matchup for each team. So for example, you mentioned our Yale event, that's mostly New England-based teams. So when you go to that event, you're probably going to be playing a New England-based team and you want to make sure that people have good matchups, A, according to their strength of their teams, but B, I also consider it their geographic location. So if there's, for example, like the Clams in Massachusetts that are in a bracket of 8 teams, you don't want them playing against each other because they're both Boston area teams. Sometimes it's inevitable based on the size of the bracket, but this is where you as a tournament director need to go in and make sure like, all right, I have a Connecticut team playing a New Hampshire team, playing a Boston team, playing a Westchester New York team. And then that way they go away from the event and be like, hey, we play teams from 4 different states and not someone that's in our backyard that if we really wanted to, we could scrimmage them on a Tuesday night before your event. And I think that's something that people overlook. They make the schedule, they throw it out there to everyone, and then they don't take the time to research to either A, change it, or B, make those considerations for those club directors, because people don't want to go to all these events and play the same teams. Like I said, sometimes it's inevitable based on the size of the bracket, but I think a lot of that goes into the relationships with people that you have, whether that's the program directors or that's the college coaches, and making sure you're honest with them, be like, hey, here's the teams that are coming, and also making sure that's the best matchups for the club coaches and directors, and also giving them matchups that the college coaches want to see as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting about, I guess, almost 10 years ago now, I was working inside the Cross and they were developing their event side. Like it was a brand new venture they were trying to do, and watching ops people go through that is kind of watching a car crash in slow motion if they haven't done it before. And a lot of my friends are in it still, and some of them got out of it. It is such a high pressure thing to put on a quality event. Even if you have a differentiating factor, like for the Inside the Cross events, it was like, oh, you have me doing a write-up, Ty Zander's doing a write-up, Jeff Shannon doing write-ups on these players. That's something that you can't get other places, or you're just going to the website to get that. But the rest of it, I remember sitting there in the tent wearing this like bright orange shirt that said I work for Inside the Cross on the front. And I'm like, I am exhausted. How were you guys here at 6 a.m. setting this up? Like, I'm just like, you're drained, right? So I see that process being so difficult to pull off. How do you find people that's what they like to do? Because I think that's kind of the key to like succeed in these tournaments. You have to have people that really, like you said, buy in, but also are good at it. It's definitely a skill set that you have to develop.
It's tough. And plus the day before, so we had an event on a Saturday, Sunday, Kyle. On Friday, I'm setting up the venue. So I'm putting up bone edge. You're putting out field flags. You're doing all this stuff. There's nothing worse when someone calls you at like 11 a.m. on a Friday and I'm at a venue and I know I'm going to be there for another 2 hours or whatever, like sweating and getting it all dialed in before the weekend. And someone is like calling about like some minute thing where I'm like, I don't have time for you right now. I'll have time at 4 o'clock, but I need to go set up this venue. And then the next morning, if games are at 8, you're right, you're there at 5:45 or 6 in the morning, getting it all dialed in. We've been very fortunate though, back to your question about, there's some local programs, universities around here that offer like sports management programs. And we're connected through that. And just by word of mouth, we've also have had the foundation of our club teams, specifically the boys, because it's been a little longer, where we've actually hired 2 of our former boys club players. And I tell parents all the time, like, what better investment that you made for your kid and then playing for NXT? Like, it's not like any of our competitors can ever say, hey, give us $8,000 of your money over the course of 5 years. And when your son's 23, we're going to give him a full-time job with salary and benefits. That's a pretty good investment that those two families made for guys that have worked for us. And then when you do get some of these interns that work for you, you can kind of see if they like it or not. And we've been very fortunate enough to hire a bunch of our interns because they understand what that life is like in the event management and they've been trained in it already. And as a result, like now that transition of them working for us, they know what it's like and they're not like, oh my God, like 12, 13 hour days on the weekends and being like a deer in headlights. They're very well aware of that situation and what that calendar year looks like for them too, of like their work schedule. So it's definitely have helped to have some of these universities offer that event management and sports management program. And then people wanting to get into it as a result of lacrosse. And we've been doing this for a while now, so people know us. And we've been blessed with some very, very good interns, but also now that have turned into very qualified workers for us.
Well, these events have expectations from a number of different people, right?
Right.
You've got the players who are paying for a service, so they want to go to a tournament that's competitive, where they're going to develop and compete at a high level. They're expecting college coaches to be on the sideline watching them, or whether it's Division I, II, or III. You've got parents who are paying for a service, and they want to show up and make sure they get a parking spot right on the field that their son is playing on, right? You got to have...
Well, they got to carry their bag, Jack.
Yeah, you got to...
How are you going to carry the bag?
So from a club perspective, you look at all those things, and obviously you guys have to look at all those things too. The parking, the vendors, there's got to be food, there's got to be water, you got to have trainers, you have to have good trainers. You have coaches keeping score at every table, college coach, which is great because then that's another eye on the players from the sideline, not just on the field too. But there are a lot of different expectations that, and a lot of time and effort that go into not only putting on the events, but, you know, we spend a lot of time evaluating events after we go to the events, checkpoints, and make sure that they check all of our needs. Because you go into an event, I mean, I don't know, it was about 7 years ago, Harvard called us up a week before the event was going to take place, and they told us we were 7 out of the 13 teams going to the Harvard tournament.
Yeah.
And now I have to deal with all the parents.
Yeah. What are some of those, what's the checklist look like though?
Conditions of the field, right? Yep. They have to be good conditions, good officiating,
mm-hmm.
Good competition, good schedule, the length of the games. Like NXT, you get a timeout, which is important. You look for teaching moments. Like a lot of these youth tournaments now, they'll have like 30-minute games or 20-minute half times. You want to have teaching moments too, even at the high school level.
Yeah.
So NXT has teaching moments because you've got 4 periods. So you get teaching moments after each quarter, then you get halftime, and then each team gets a timeout. So those are things we're looking for as well, and make sure, I mean, there's like 150 college coaches there every year from different levels. I mean, our players are mostly Division II and III. We'll get an occasional one from here and there. So we're not going to send a team to a tournament that has all Division I coaches, because that's just not going to work for us.
Right.
Parking is very important too, because some tournaments you go to, there is no parking. It's a pain in the ass. And one thing I recommend is that you have parking spots for the coaches. You should have parking spots for your special directors.
We've tried that before, and then you get someone sneak, a wise parent will be like, oh, like, I'm Jack Piatelli.
Right.
Jack Piatelli, Piatelli Cross. And the guy who's working line has no idea. He's just like, all right, come on in. It's one of those things, like, if you look like you know what you're doing,
yes,
then you can get it. You can get in there. But yeah, you make a point. Like, the field needs to be good. And if you play a part game, bathrooms, women,
right,
they don't want to use porta potties, and like, rightfully so. So you need plenty of bathrooms. And if you can, like, indoor bathrooms are massive. Yeah, time blocks. Do you go halves? Do you go quarters? Like, this past weekend, our recruiting event, we went 4 10-minute quarters. You lose a little bit of the game time, but you allow the coaches to get 6 minutes of coaching in that game to make adjustments. And there's so many balls on end lines, a pet peeve. So I used to coach club as well. And I would hate it when I would go to an event and I'm like, there's one ball on the end line. Like, are you kidding me? Especially if it's like a close game or in a semifinal championship. Like, a kid going to run to find a ball, it could take 10 to 15 seconds, which is valuable in a short game. So we call these things that you're talking about, Jack, is stakeholders. So like the refs, right? Everyone complains about refs. Like, you need great refs and you need a good relationship with refs. The parents are stakeholders because you want them happy, because that's who are the club director's clients. That's theirs. So they tell the club director if they like it or if they don't. And then obviously the club directors, and making sure that they're having a great time. And then the facility, you need to be able to work hand in hand with the facility to make sure that the fields are in great condition, that they have parking, they're doing everything they can do to make your event great. Because at the end of the day, I say, like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And ultimately, like, all that comes back on the director of the event, and you got to be able to deal with it.
I think one of the things that if I'm evaluating, and even when I was a college coach, when I was evaluating, the one thing I hated to see was the short field. Like, you get out there and you're like, oh, great. So kids are going to shoot from this dinky restraining line. Are you serious? Like, these, now I can't evaluate the goalies. Now I can't evaluate the defender. It's just like, oh, can the kid get his shot off? That's all. It's the only box I can check now. And I think, like, that doesn't really register for a ton of people, but that's one of the first things I look at is like, how big is this field? How is it? Is it crowned? Is it turf? Is it mowed? I went to a tournament. I'm not going to say which one. Went to a tournament last year and the grass was like 6 inches high. I was like, what are we doing? Are we hunting rabbits? Like, what is this? It's out of control.
Kids coming out ticks. Kids have ticks on their calves.
Oh, 100%. I'm walking in there. I'm just like, no. All right. Guess I'm putting the long socks on for this. Like, it was wild. And I think, like, the quality control is the thing that is starting to separate a lot of these top tournaments from mid-tier tournaments from tournaments that won't be around next year. Oh, Jack and I have talked about this. We did a whole podcast, like, previewing what we look for in summer tournaments and why we choose the places we go to. And I think the thing that really separates it is, like you're talking about, the attention to detail is so integral to the experience of everyone involved, not just the kids, the coaches, the parents, the people putting on the event, the refs, like you were saying, the ops people. Are they having, I know they're working, it's a crazy, you have to prepare yourself mentally to really give yourself to an event. Like, you really do. If you're not fully invested in, like, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure this goes well, it's not going to go well. It's like Murphy's Law. What can go wrong will go wrong, especially at an event. So the fact that Jack speaks so highly of your event, and I've heard of it before. I know people that have worked in NXT as well. It's very much a high level. It's the bar, right? And trying to reset the bar every year has to be some sort of difficult gesture from your end.
What I will say is, like, the dirty little secret of U Sports is, like, the business. Like, everyone is now running a business where they're going to make money off of an event or a club team, whatever it is. People are doing it now. And like at the end of the day, like to make money, I'm a firm believer, to make money, you got to spend money. So we will spend money on college coaches. We spend money on nicer facilities. The end line netting, there's people that run tournaments and don't put a single net behind fields. And like I was at an event last week, I ran an event in Georgia. The week before, someone didn't put up end line netting at the one facility we're at, and a guy got severely injured his eye with a shot. And that is just out of people not spending the money and laziness of like setting up a venue and doing that and taking safety into like as a cautionary measure. And as a result, like someone gets hurt, but people have skated by those things for years and will still do it and cut corners after events. And for us, it's like, it does take effort on a Friday to put all the exponents up there, pain in the ass or snow fencing. Like that's the last thing you want to be doing. But at the end result, like that's what people are accustomed to when they come to our events, and we have to give them a good product because they're spending their good money, and we want to make sure that they're getting the most out of it. And we're putting a lot of hard work into it, not just but behind the scenes in the office, but we're manual labor as well. And I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, I think the thing we look at is the value. We spend X amount of dollars, we get in the value we expect back for all those reasons, the bathrooms, the fields and the competition, and it's an investment for us. But I think when you get greedy in this business, so that's when things start to fall apart. You have to spend money in order to be successful. And some of these tournament directors want to not put up the nets or shortcut a few things, and they end up not being in business very long.
Yeah. I think, again, my experience is more limited than yours or Brett's. Just in the past couple summers, it's interesting who will do things for you when I'm like, hey, I'm coming to your tournament, can you just make sure I have a book? I don't ask for anything else. And then I get there and they're like, oh my God, you're here. And I'm like, I told you I was coming. Like, it's fine. I don't need a lunch. I don't need a cart. I don't need, I don't need anything. I'm just here to like do my job. Like I'm very low maintenance. And that side of it is very much the promotional side of these events is really like what has changed in the last 5 years for me, just from beginning back, like I said, back about 8-10 years ago when I was doing it as part of, I guess, part of an event. Never thought of it that way, but I guess I was part of the event. And now being an outsider going to different events, you can just see so many different things. Like, and I've railed against this every single time. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to repeat it for anyone listening. If your book is wrong, my write-up will be wrong. If you give me a book with bad stuff, how would I know? Like, I had a parent complain that I didn't know what helmet the kid was wearing. I'm like, I'm going off the book, lady. What? Why are you in my face? Like, I'm just trying to promote what this is. If the jersey number's wrong, like, I'm sorry, but I can see the jersey number. I'm here. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff is so nitpicky and crazy. And I know I get 1/100th of it that you get and you get in both of your different jobs where you guys have to work together on this. So I guess like my question from that is, how do you put together a list of, I asked you what your checklist was, but in order of importance, where do you operate from?
As far as a book?
Like as far as, book? Yeah, let's talk about a book and then the coaches. Cause I think those are the two most things that I interact with the most.
As far as a book, like we try to, I think like the most imperative thing for a college coach is the note column. So they can take out as many notes as possible. We try to give like the most space for that, but it's like, all right, is the kid's first and last name in there? Yes. What is his grad year? What is his number? So number first, his first last name, grad year, position, and then boom, like that's the most important stuff with the notes. And then they can write on it. For our team events, we don't provide like the electronic copies just because there's so many teams and they have their emails. And there's this whole thing about privacy sharing of emails and everything right. Like that of college coaches who might be connected to a club program. And we'll just take that and give it to a club director. Like that's whole another rabbit hole we can go down another time about contact information and data and how protective you need to be, but also like how anal some club coaches are. Like there's nothing worse. When I asked for a coach's roster book and it would be Jay Piatelli at PiatelliLacrosse.com. I'm like, you are the laziest coach there ever is that you're just copying and pasting emails in there. That's your own because you're either worried about someone taking your kid or you're just being lazy? Which one is it? Like, you're not helping the kid out if you're trying to control the whole recruiting process. And I think that of just the basic information is very important. Because obviously, if a coach likes a kid, he knows who the club director is, can reach out to them or the coach that's listed on their book, and then can get more information on that kid. So for us, it's kind of like the basic information that you need, but we want to kind of make the note column as big as we can so they can take as many notes as they. There's nothing worse than you can only write like two words about a kid. If it's like RR, great shot, on like the acronyms ST, shot on the run, high level, the more you can kind of put in there, we feel like it's better when you're making a book for the kids. And we've done a good job. Peter Lawrence, who's one of the original founders of the company, he's been very beneficial in making books based on what he wanted to see as a college coach. And he's been very creative and on the forefront of what college coaches look for in talking to other guys. So we've been blessed having like his expertise and experience as well in making those college books.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than name, GPA, no number, no email. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not watching your team. I mean, if I'm a college coach, I'm going to go, okay, I'm not watching this team. Like, it's the same process. Like, we're all there to kind of get the same thing. Their job is a little more intensive than mine is, obviously. I just want to write up kids that play well. But seeing that is just, it's such a faux pas. And you're right. It is lazy club directors. Those are the culprits. Like, I don't want my kids poached. It's like, you don't have enough faith in your program to keep your kid?
Yep. Like, kids get poached left and right. Like, your kid's going to leave your program, you get another kid join your program from somewhere else. Like, it's just a cycle that continues to go. But the worst part is some of these parents are shaded by these college coaches' books. They have no idea what's in them. So imagine going to an event and you play for, I'm just going to make up a handlebar LC. And your coach doesn't submit the roster on time, then they don't show up in the book, because we always consistently tell people your roster is due by X or X date. And then I will follow up like, hey, if your roster is not in by Wednesday at 12 o'clock, they're not making the book. They will not make the book. I'm telling you that right now. And there's so many times when people go to like we go to an event and a college coach might be like, hey, where's the handlebar LC's 24s? I was like, coach didn't submit the roster on time. And it's like, what a bad look. But the thing is, the parents don't know that. Only the college coach will know that, because we have a job to do too. Like my colleagues, you are putting together and printing out these books. Like, we're not going to do it on Thursday or Friday. We've given you plenty of opportunities to do it as a club director. That's your job. So we can do our job. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of these guys are not organized and do it on time. And then some parents don't even realize that like their team may never make the book, or their information's inaccurate, and that's not on us. That's like what we get from the directors.
Yeah, you asked for rosters a couple of months in advance, and we have the rosters, I mean, for 6 or 8 months. I mean, they might change a little bit from when we have tryouts in early fall until the following Sunday, but we've got basically the full roster for the entire year. So there's no excuses for the club directors not to have the right information to pass along when it's requested.
Right. USA Lacrosse announced that they're going to try and do, or they're heading an effort to do birth year as the new kind of standard for they're going to start it with youth. And then allegedly the plan is to roll it out to older ages and club teams. What's your take on that? How do you think that's going to work out?
I feel at the high school level, it'll still be grad year, because that's where college coaches will recruit from. So for example, like right now it's 24s, 25s, 26s. They're only really recruiting 24s. And they're looking at the top 25s. That's all that matters to the college coaches. I feel like at the youth levels, it is what's needed and what is necessary, because one of the problems in our sport is parents taking advantage of having their kid be a year older. And I have seen it worked out. Like, I coached at the Haverford School in Pennsylvania, and we have some very good kids like that are at our school. Some of them are a year older. And when you're looking at a kid and recruiting a kid who's 16 or 16 to 17 rather than 15, like, that makes a difference. Like, one extra year of them being more physically developed and everything like that. In college, it all evens out by that point in time. But I really do think it makes an advantage when you're a year older. When you look at a kid and you're like, wow, like, he's a good 23. And then you're like, well, he's actually 22. And then you're like, oh, as a 22, you're like, he's a good player, but not good enough to go to that school. So that I think will will even out now, but with the grad years. But if you get kids the same years playing together, I think it's better for the sport. I just feel like it is a daunting task to do. They asked us to help them with it, like, God, 5 or 6 years ago now, and there's no way to monitor it or police it. And if you do, like, US Lacrosse needs to, I'm not lying, they need to hire like 5 people full time to do this job. And then you're then going to these tournament directors and you're saying, hey, before the games, you need to check all these kids. Like US Soccer has figured it out as they have like these tags and everything. But US Soccer is making way more money than US Lacrosse and has the funds to allocate to do that. You would have to be like, all right, before everyone's first game, someone needs to be on that field. So can you imagine when we're at Yale and we're on 14 fields, you need someone at every field at 7:50 before the 8 a.m. games, and you got to line up every team and you have to go and be like, hey, number one, what's your name? And you look, he's like, I'm Kyle Devitt. You're like, all right, good. Number two, tell me your name. Jack Piatelli, you're good. 3. And then if there's one kid that's off, it's like, well, then what do you do? Tell them to sit out. Then the game's got to start at 8 a.m. And like, it's a lot more of a daunting task than I think people understand. And I feel like that's going to be an issue, is trying to roll this out and implement it at events and double check and all that is a lot of work. It's the right thing, but I just don't know long-term if it's going to work out, because you need a lot of time, resource, and money to do this.
Yeah, I think people, there's different demographics that are a part of lacrosse, right? And one of the things that maybe we don't talk about a lot is that a lot of the kids that play lacrosse are well off. They come from successful families, and they can, a lot of times it's about affording to play lacrosse. And I think that the money from that doesn't go back into the sport all the time. And as someone, again, I'm not railing against public versus private or anything like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, like, if you're part of these club teams, you're paying X amount of money, you have expectations. And the reality is there has to be some sort of policing of how each kid is on each team and how old they are and when they graduate and what's even like what school they're at, if they're saying the right school in the book and where they're supposed to go, where they are going, if they're committed or not. Things like that. I mean, literally, like, commitment, like, kind of means nothing now. You can commit to a school and just be like, nah, later. Like, it's wild. There's so few rules. And again, I don't want to, like, highlight that there's so few rules, but you just did, and I'm backing you up with what you're saying. I think that's definitely something that needs to be more organizationally watched. Watched is the best word I can come up with. And I'm not the person with a solution for that, but I think that at least there are inroads being made. I think the consolidation of the recruiting with IMLCA, that has helped, I think, a little bit. It definitely helps my job with profiles and whatnot, because I can put in, all I have to do really is put in a kid's name into Google and type lacrosse next to it. And usually his IMLCA profile will pop up or his club team will pop up. And I have the info that I need to start. Right? If I don't have that already from a book that I should have had it from already, I think that that part of what we're in this summer cycle has to improve. And I don't know if you have any like ideas off the top of your head, either one of you guys, of how, you know, we can do that as like a community, or if it's a club problem, or if it's, I mean, it is a club, it's everyone's problem, but who takes the initiative, I guess, is my question.
Well, the club directors have to take the initiative, to be honest with you. I mean, if they want to have the youth players play by age, it's our responsibility to make sure the players on our teams are playing at the age appropriate.
Because you're going to have that data, right?
Yes.
Like you have to know when the, you're not going to not have a birth date, right?
Yeah, right. Just like we make sure they're 24s playing with 24s and 25s playing with 25s. Now we just kind of. It's like hockey did it. Hockey did it. You're a 98 or a 99. They were able to do it. So it's got to come down to the clubs and the directors and the coaches. And I mean, that's why you last as long as you do if you do it right in this business, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to come down to. So we're going to go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, the directors and also, and it's US Lacrosse, like, they're still the governing body. So ultimately, like a lot of this falls on them too. And I know they've been shuffling through a lot of personnel changes and trying to figure out the right things. Like, God bless them. But I still think they have enough resources too on their end to make it work. And if you're doing this and say everyone has to be governed and they're giving $10 for every kid that signs up for the US Lacrosse, you're hoping that some of that money gets reallocated to someone that can oversee this process of making sure that the kids are the right age and then go from there. But there's a lot of people moving parts. But at the end of the day, now that a lot of these clubs are now people's full-time jobs, everyone's going to look out what's best for their business, whether that's governed or not, as long as they can do it. And how you kind of said it without saying, it's a wild, wild west right now in so many different aspects, from like the transfer portal in college to used in high school lacrosse. There just needs to be more structure for sure.
We're going to change gears. Firewolves.
Let's go.
You're the captain of the Firewolves. You planning on playing another year? How many years have you been playing with the Firewolves, Black Wolves?
This will be, I think my first year was, well, the same. It's tricky. It's like trying to explain this. I feel like it's a meme. So we were the original Philadelphia Wings.
Right.
So I was with them in my first year was 2011. So last year would have technically been 13 years. So to play this year would be 14 with the same organization. In 2015, we moved up to New England. And then in 2021, we moved to Albany and switched out the Black for Fire and became the Firewolves. So with that organization, I've been with them since 2011, really. But since the multiple name changes, we are where we are right now.
How did you get in the box, though? Because you're not Canadian. It's usually like my question, like, oh, you're not Canadian. How'd you get in the box?
Well, it's funny, too, because like I went to Delaware. And when I was there, we were really good. But it's still Delaware, like mid-tier Division I program who everyone else is sleeping giant. And my senior year, I got drafted to the MLL. And one of my assistant coaches at the time, one of my great friends, Chris Collins, went to Delaware. And he's like, look, like, I know you can play field. Like, we all watch you, D-medium field. Like, you're going to be great in the MLL. But he's like, you should try the NLL too. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, dude. Like, you might as well. It's an awesome league. Trust me. So I played in the MLL. And then that summer, one of the guys, his name was Doug Locker. He was the GM of the Dragons, but he was also the GM of the San Jose Stealth at the time because he lived out in California. So he watched MLL games, college games, so on and so forth. He reached out to me about like potentially drafting me, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, doesn't draft me, signs me as an unrestricted free agent. And that year coming in was myself, Kyle Hartzell, Paul Rabel, Michael Doniger, and Will Dalton. We had six American rookies on that team. Dalton and Doniger made it like half a year before they cut them. And obviously myself, Rabel, and Hartzell continue to play after that and making our strides in box. But that's really how it started. I showed up my first training camp, guys, with no kidney pads. Like no one told me any pads to wear or anything like that. And it wasn't until our first. So I went like 2 or 3 weekends without kidney pads. And looking back at it like crazy, it wasn't until our first exhibition game against Colorado where a fellow rookie, Reese Dutch, was like, Brett, like you need these. Like probably no one said anything to you because they were just tee off on your ribs. But now that like you're probably going to make the team, like you need to wear these, and gave me my first kidney pads. And that's kind of how I started, with Chris Collins like kind of pushing me into it. And I would fly cross country first 2 years every weekend for 6 months to wherever I was playing, whether it was San Jose, and then next year moved up to Seattle. So the one benefit is that like I racked up a ton of miles flying. I'm almost just on American. I think I'm at 980,000, almost at the 1,000,000 mile marker on American Airways. So I've flown a lot in my last 15 years playing professional lacrosse, and kind of how I got into box, and I love it. I played when I was younger because it would have made me a much better offensive player and understanding some of the things to bring to this field game. I think box, you can translate over. There's nothing for field. You can translate the box. And yeah, I'm a big fan. It's been awesome.
And your internal organs all work?
All work. All like, okay.
You're okay?
My nose is crooked. Yeah, my nose is crooked. But other than that, yeah, my kidneys, ribs, the ticker, it's all good.
Oh, and yesterday was your official first Father's Day. Happy Father's Day.
It was. Thank you. Yeah, I had my wife and I welcomed our daughter, Willa, February 22nd. So in the middle of the season, I had her. The other captain, my best friend on the team, John LaFontaine, he had his daughter 2 weeks after us too. So we were both going through fatherhood together and trying to catch up as much sleep as we could when we had our games. Naps were crucial. But yeah, first Father's Day yesterday, it's pretty special.
So are you retiring?
It is. Just come out and ask. It is a question and a family decision that my wife and I have had discussions like, I don't know, probably for the last 3 years. And I don't even think about it, to be honest, until the summer lacrosse season's done, the tournaments. Right. And my coaches are great and they're respected. Because they know when my season ends, like basically every weekend up until the middle of July, like I'm focused on lacrosse and doing events and stuff like that. I don't have really time to think about it. And they just basically say, hey, before August 1st, because that's when like free agency starts, just give us a decision and let us know. Because like we want you back, or if you don't want to come back here, like we can kind of plan accordingly. So they've been great of handling my situation with work. And to be honest, like I don't really think about it. Just because I have so much on my plate right now.
Yeah, good for you. And I know the team was very young this year. Joe Nardella going down didn't help, but you've got a pretty good young nucleus and veterans like yourself where next year, obviously, you've got one of the best goaltenders in the league. So a lot could change for the team next year.
Yeah, extremely young. Obviously, I'm the oldest guy on the team, but we have Hyde Kurtz and Delaware coming in. He was up there in like points per game this year, Canadian. Alex Simmons, we drafted like 4th or 5th overall last year. He comes in after doing like his COVID year at Syracuse. And then we have the number one pick who everyone's saying is going to be Dyson Williams. And whether he's made a decision to go back to Duke or not, we could use him. And basically his box game, people have kind of told me that it's like Mark Matthews and Jeff Teague at a kid. So I'm like, you can't pass up on that. And that would certainly help. So yeah, that's a learning process, but we had a great locker room and guys that despite our record, like everyone came in every week trying to win. And that's all you can ask for at that level.
You know what my favorite thing is about you, Jack? You make me look subtle on these podcasts.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You're like a hammer. You're just out here doing it.
I love it.
It's so awesome.
I get being direct.
Yeah. Well, I you make me look subtle, which is, I think it's a compliment. Maybe it's not. I don't know. You're going to take it. But
what are you retiring?
Oh, yeah. Well, you got a long time with me, buddy. This thing's going to run forever. Brett, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me and letting me talk a little bit about kind of what I do off the field, but on the field at the same point in time. Appreciate all you guys are doing for, especially up there in that New England area for lacrosse and growing the game. When we were up in Connecticut, I love that area of being a Philly guy. Not so much. Boston has broken my heart so many times, but the fans were always like passionate about the game of lacrosse. And thank you guys for help spreading it and put the word out there for it.
Appreciate it. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks again.
Just so the audience knows, we're going to take a little break for the next 2 weeks to recharge, get through the summer. But we'll be back mid-July with new episodes of Chasing the Goal. And we want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.